Hi, I'm Amy Loben. I'm a professor in the Department of Geography at the University of Oregon, and I work in two research areas. One is neurogeography, which is kind of the synthesis of neuroscience and geospatial cognition. So Bjorn, I was pretty excited to see your MRI scan images, and then you didn't talk about them. And I also work in the area of access and accessibility. So I'll be talking about access today, and people have talked about access a little bit, but I don't talk about access in the context of socioeconomic status. I talk about access in the context of disability. So just a little motivating, what motivates me. 20% of people in the U.S. have a documented disability. If we're all alive long enough, we're going to fall in there. Half of those have a disability that's severe enough to require daily assistance. From terms of public health or human health, access to work and school and social and environmental space is an issue of public health. If you can't access space or can't access society, work, or school, then you will become marginalized. And I think that spatial data science can help facilitate spatial access. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about the relationship between disability and access and spatial data science. The outline of my presentation, I'll give you a really, really brief framework for spatial data science and disability. And then we are the case study panel, so I'll give you a case study illustrating sort of how access and spatial data science can work together. So again, really briefly, context. There's a lot of ways that you can talk about access or accessibility, and so here I've created a graphic that the little blob circle in the upper right is spatial data science or geospatial data science or GI science. We probably need to work that out. So you can talk about access in terms of mapping disability, accessible spatial data science, and spatial data science and accessibility. Just in terms of terminology, usability is different than accessibility. Usability requires accessibility, but you can talk about accessibility without talking about usability. So some examples of the types of access. So mapping disability, this is kind of an antiseptic approach to merging spatial data science and disability. Here you're just using maps to illustrate patterns of disability-related constructs. Accessible spatial data science, we do a lot of accessible spatial data science in my lab, which can be anything from creating static tactile maps, which are either printed or on a 3D printer, however we're doing it, to digital products that are that also are accessible. And spatial data science and accessibility. And this is where we use spatial data science to enhance accessibility for people with disabilities. And this is actually the case study that I'm going to be talking about is an example of spatial data science and accessibility, where we are exploiting the power of spatial data science to enhance accessibility to the environment. And so what's motivating this case study is I wanted to start out by just mapping space. We all can fill the same sort of XY space, but that space is going to be different depending on what our access is, whether it's socioeconomic status that provides access or barriers, or if it's disability. And so I wanted to map it. I'm a cartographer by training. All three of my degrees are in geography with a specialty in cartography. So I wanted to map what I'm calling privileged and disenfranchised space. So this is what actually motivated what I'll show you as the case study in just a few minutes. And so I'm thinking about this beyond the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, which is what mandates accessible features like wheelchair ramps or curb cuts, but there are a whole lot of environmental features that are 100% ADA compliant and still function as barriers to accessibility. So, for example, some environmental features that may provide barriers to accessibility could include the type of curb cut. There are some curb cuts. You guys know what a curb cut is? Okay. Well, amazingly enough, they're at a four-way intersection. It's completely legal to have one curb cut at each corner. That curb cut feeds into the middle of the intersection. Completely legal, but not super awesome for people who are blind or low vision, because it's not unusual for somebody to just, someone who is a white cane user specifically, not a dog user, to walk into the middle of the intersection because of the way the curb cut's pointing. So it's completely ADA compliant. Some other things that are ADA compliant are the surface material of a path. Is it paved? Is it mulch? Whatever it is, ADA compliant. The width of a sidewalk, the slope of a sidewalk. So these are all things that provide, that function as barriers, but are completely ADA compliant. And so this is what I wanted to map. And so again, I'm looking at mapping this disparity between these two types of spaces. This led to the development of accessibility maps for the town in which I live, which is Eugene, which is where the University of Oregon is. And we created personalized maps, and then we created a personalized routing app, which I like to call Google Maps for People with Disabilities. So here's what we did. You can't just personalize because you're really smart. Personalization has to, well, I think, should be bottom up, should be driven by empirical research. You need to have an empirical basis behind why you are personalizing, especially in the way that we're talking about personalizing, and I'll show you what I mean by that. So I interviewed some people, and basically the interviews were unstructured, open-ended questions where I basically said, okay, if you are planning a route from one location to another, what kinds of environmental features represent facilitators to your access and barriers to your access? And then I conducted a couple focus groups, and the reason for those focus groups was eventually to develop a survey, which we then, the first round, deployed nationally to get the empirical data that we needed in order to personalize our accessible routing app. Because it's pretty easy to create a routing app, especially if you have network analysts, but the empirical data behind how you personalize, that's a little bit harder to get. So we have the results from our survey. We conducted a factor analysis to identify groups based on disability. And then we conducted a discriminant analysis, which gave us our coefficients, which is what we used to develop the personalization in the routes. It's maybe a little bit easier to see here. What I want to illustrate here is that when it comes to disability and access is not one size fits all. So that's why the personalization process is really important. So we married our survey data with GIS data, and this is an example of our GIS data and our survey data were applied in sidewalk segments. And so on any, not necessarily true throughout the whole city, but sometimes on a single street, one side of the street would be accessible to somebody and the other side wouldn't because of the sidewalk features. And this one, ironic, I can't see it. This one is for people who are blind or low vision. This one is for people who are in manual wheelchairs. So our four groups of disability and access were people who are blind or low vision, people who are deaf or hard of hearing, people who are in manual mobility devices, like manual wheelchairs or crutches, and people who are in power mobility devices. They were statistically significant groups. Okay, and then bringing back our chart there, we then developed our routing app using our personalization data. Our personalization interface was written in Java, and in the upper right corner of the screen, you can see different categories. So users of this app can go to our categories and they can say, I need routes that are personalized based on my level of vision or level of hearing or manual mobility aid or power mobility aid. So those categories came from our factor analysis. But then in the lower right corner, we also have made this app possible for people to personalize even more. So people can go in and they can identify for each of the environmental features in our data set, how important those features are, either for barriers or access to, or barriers or facilitators to their accessibility. This is a prototype case study. We built it in ArcGIS Network Analyst, and our linear discriminant analysis coefficients is what allowed us to create the personalization scalers. I'm almost done. And here's what, access is not one size fits all. The personalization process results in the creation of different routes depending on what people identify as barriers or facilitators to their access. And so in these two examples, I guess it doesn't matter where you start or where you end, if you're starting at the circle or starting at the square, but you can see that the routes are completely different, even though it's the same to and from spot. So this app, we did it on a whim just to see if we could create an app that could be personalized for people with disabilities and whether or not that personalization process would illustrate differences in disenfranchised or privileged spaces, which it kind of does. But we also, because it's for people with disabilities, the interface is fully accessible. And so we don't have these instructions on the screen. I just popped them up there for the purposes of this presentation. But screen readers, so people who use JAWS or other kinds of screen readers, can have the option of having these instructions delivered by audio. And so while this was one example, we do a lot of research in the area of accessibility in my lab. I think there are a lot of research opportunities. We're talking about kind of setting a foundation or a framework for spatial data science here. And I think accessibility isn't just about applied research, but I think there's some real fundamental empirical research that can be done. One example is on the right. We built this GIS 100% sound delivered. So while most of us use a screen, the space is delivered completely via tablet and audio. The first round was a disaster. And now we're trying to figure out how we can completely reconceptualize the idea and representation of space so it can be delivered via sound, because that's pretty hard. So there's a lot of empirical basic research that can be done in this area, and then there's obviously a lot of applications that can be done as well. Thank you.